Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Christopher Kelly and today I'm joined by Dr. Tommy Wood. Tommy, say hello.
Hello.
Did you notice how I didn't set you up to say hello, Tommy?
You did it well that time. You trapped me.
I did. I've been planning that all day on my bike. We've got a lot to talk about. We better get stuck into this. Yeah. First of all, talk about the Icelandic Health Symposium. Your talk is just being made available online, and I'll link to that in the show notes for this episode. But talk about the Icelandic Health Symposium.
Yeah, Icelandic Health Symposium is a group that I was part of forming based in Iceland, obviously, with some doctors and some other guys. And we had sort of the inaugural conference last year in May. And we had guys like Tim Noakes, Gary Taubes, Asim Malhotra, some really great names, and particularly in sort of the lifestyle, low-carb kind of community talking. And I spoke, and the talk that I did was more about sort of the lifestyle side of things, and that is probably one of the favorite talks I've given, actually. It was sort of
much
higher level, not very technical, more sort of, I tried to make it more sort of like TED talk style, with some like some data and stuff in there too, but sort of a bit more all-encompassing and accessible. So I thought that was pretty good, and that's available now that we can link to that if people want to watch it. It's also fairly short. I think it's half an hour.
Yeah, I watched it again and I realized that a lot of what I've been learning has been going in one out ear and out the other, right? It seems all brand new again, even though that we've built a business around it. It's just really strange to see the references again. You're thinking, oh wow, this is evidence-based medicine. I remember now. We're not just making absolutely. It up.
Yeah, all the sort of crazy hippie stuff that we tell people to do is actually sort of based in some real research, which is nice.
It was the walking around with no shoes on that really made me think this. You know, it sounds like I'm just making this stuff up when I tell people to do it, but it really is evidence-based medicine.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say, and it's in the wonderful Reykjavik in Iceland, which is an amazing place to be. It was the first time I went there last year and I really, really enjoyed it. And both me and Julie, my wife, are very much looking forward to going back there. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so that brings us perfectly onto the fact that Icelandic Health Symposium is obviously going to happen again this year in September. The main day is on September 8th. This year it's called Who Wants to Live Forever? So it's based on longevity. So, you know, we've got some people talking about the best ways to improve longevity. So last year the conference was hosted by Marianne de Masi, who people might know from some of her documentaries in Australia about various things, including cholesterol and Wi-Fi and all this stuff. But this year, the host is me. So I get to host all these fabulous speakers. So we're going to have guys like Ben Greenfield, Dom D'Agostino, Brian Walsh, Diana Rogers, Doug McGuff, Rongan Chatterjee, and Sachindananda Panda. I always get his stumble over
That's
his
a tricky
name.
Name to say, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be a great sort of range of things from feeding restriction to strength training to the gut microbiome to ketosis to, you know, whether antioxidants are beneficial or not and all this kind of stuff. So, and how to make that sustainable. Obviously, you know, if everybody on the planet is going to live longer, we obviously need to make that sustainable and sort of keep our resources, our planetary resources available long into the future. So I think it's going to be a really nice sort of well-rounded discussion. And around that, the day before, there's going to be a cycling and brain and body biohacking workshop with Ben Greenfield. And you can also, on the Friday night after the main conference, you can sign up or pay to have dinner with the speakers if you want to sort of get direct access to them. And then on the Saturday, we're going to have more of a practitioner workshop. So it's going to be, again, Brian Walsh, but then also Deborah Gordon and Mark Cucuzelo, who are going to talk about various things in terms of how chronic metabolic disease is initiated and then, you know, ways to treat that. And I think those guys are really sort of at the forefront of a lot of that. So I think that's going to be really exciting. So people can go to IcelandicHealthSymposium.is and then find the website there and book tickets. That just went live a few days ago. So, you know, we'd love for people to come out and join us there, and I think it's a really great opportunity to visit Iceland. And I know it makes it much easier to get speakers involved because they all go, oh yeah, I really want to go to Iceland. I'll bring my wife and my family. So
yeah.
So everybody should do the same and come and join us. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
It was absolutely a lot of fun. We did a lot of sitting in geothermic hot tubs and lifting heavy things. And then right on the last day, your mum's neighbour, who embarrassingly his name I can't remember right now, said to me, oh yeah, there's some really great mountain biking here. Let's go ride. And it was like 8 o'clock at night the day before we left. And so I was kind of annoyed. But I know I've got his Facebook contact, so I will get in touch with him and we should absolutely do some mountain biking in Iceland. I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I've never mountain biked in Iceland, so I think I will definitely try and rectify that this year.
Awesome. Icelandic Health Symposium. Look for the link in the show notes. Okay, so moving on. Fat Fibre, our paper has been published. I'm so excited. I say we are in the loosest sense of the terms. I feel like you did most of the heavy lifting on the paper, Tommy. So congratulations on getting that published. You want to tell us a little bit about the paper?
Thanks, yeah. So people might know about our MCT powder that we made called Fat Fibre. So it's basically MCT oil that's sort of co-sprayed with a prebiotic fiber to give you something that is going to be much easier to put into drinks bottles, put into beverages, sort of much cleaner and easier to travel with compared to something like an MCT oil if people like to use that to support their ketogenic diet or low-carb diet or something similar. And there's a lot of reasons why we don't particularly like some of the MCT oil powders that are available on the market. Either they're, you know, have some dairy products in, so, you know, for people with sensitive stomachs, they can cause issues, or they're full of like high GI carbs and things like that. So we made our own version of this powder. We wanted to make sure that it was doing what we thought it was doing. So we got together 10 people, gave them a big dose of fat fiber, and then looked at their insulin, blood sugar, and ketone levels, and saw, you know, a little sort of uptick in glucose, the sort of uptick in ketones that we'd expect, and a non-significant effect on insulin, and went up a tiny bit, which is to be expected. These guys were at rest. And sort of based on that, we then further developed it, and we now have, you know, it's much more MCT oil, so it's right. 70% C8, so it's much more ketogenic and doesn't have any effect on blood glucose, because some of the fiber appears to be slightly digestible, which actually, in terms of athletes who are taking this as a calorie source during training or racing, you know, a small amount of a carbohydrate source is actually potentially very beneficial. It allows you to use your ketones and fats from beta oxidation more efficiently. So if people really want to get into the sort of the biochemistry behind that, then, you know, the paper is open access. You can go and read it and read about how we developed it. And then sort of the next stage of fat fiber version 2, which is now available for people to try. And it's actually really popular. And I've got some in my tea right now.
That's great.
Pretty well.
Yeah, I've been using it on the bike. So for the first time in a while, I've been mixing up some calories in my water. I haven't been doing that for many years, but conversations with you and Kieran Clark at Oxford University persuaded me that maybe I should be doing this, even if I didn't really feel like I needed to do it. And I can't say I've noticed a huge difference. The main thing that I thought was beneficial was I took some C8-MCT oil without shitting my pants, right? Especially when on the bike, right? That's a real concern. And it goes down quite nice. The MCT oils are like a lip balm, you know? You get dried out lips in the sun this time of year. And it's like, rather than having water, it's just like a little bit of lip balm. It goes down quite nice. So I'm quite pleased with that. And I'm really happy about the paper. And I think you might have uncovered a little micro niche for yourself here, because already two people have contacted us and said, hey, I've got a nutritional supplement. Would you do a paper like that for me? And it seems like the only thing that's holding these people back from doing the science is the science itself, right? Designing the experiment and then writing it up. And it's all a bit of a black art to most people. And obviously you can cut through that and get it done. And so tell us about, are you kind of excited to do more experiments like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the stuff that you may want to look at in people is harder to access. If you want to do some fancy blood tests or some markers of oxidative stress or something like that, it's going to be, you know, it could potentially get very expensive to work on things like that. But when you're looking at the basics like blood sugar, blood ketones, you know, that's actually pretty easy to do. You could also do, I think some people are probably going to look at some supplements that might help with cognitive function and stuff. And you can do online testing and stuff. So it'd be very easy to access that data. Mm. But yeah, I think there's definitely this shroud of mystery around the peer review process. And once you've been through it a few times, like I have, and you've dealt with difficult peer reviewers who are just trying to, you know, try and sound clever because that's what they like to do. You know, once you've worked your way around that, then actually it's pretty easy to navigate. So I think hopefully there are some guys who want to do some studies with people using their own supplements to sort of actually see where they're working. And I really respect that. Most people are selling supplements without knowing what they actually do. So I will definitely sort of be helping as many people as I can do that kind of thing. And I think that'll be really interesting and sort of get more of this stuff out there.
Absolutely. So fatfiber.com with a PH and a RE. I'll put the link in the show notes because it's not obvious the spelling of fatfiber. And then I'll also link the open access paper. So you don't have to pay to get this one. It's completely free and it's peer reviewed. And I think it's pretty cool. Yeah, congratulations, Tommy. I'm really pleased with that.
Yeah, thanks. Me too. I should really give a lot of credit to my fiance, Elizabeth, because I was writing a blog post about this study that we did. So we made a small amount of money selling the last version of fatfiber, and that was what paid for all the testing kits and stuff.
The two cancelled each other out almost perfectly, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. So we made no net profit, but we did get a published study out of it. So I think that was definitely worth it. But I was writing this up as a blog post, and Elizabeth said, "Well, why don't you write it up as a paper?" And I was like, "Well, that's a really good thing. Well, why not?" So that's what I did, and it's turned out really well.
Yeah, amazing. So on to your next project, Hormity, or how do you pronounce it?
So I call it Hormity.
Yeah.
Although I couldn't quite decide whether it was Hormity as like hormesis or Hormeti like hormetic. Those names will probably give some people an idea of what it is, which is a tea based around green tea, which includes lots of sort of awesome plant-based polyphenols that some of which have, which give their benefits through hormesis, or those sort of like small cellular stresses that then cause beneficial adaptation. So hence the name Hormity.
Awesome. And it tastes great. That was the main thing I noticed about it. Like, without you telling me anything about the science, it just makes a fantastic hot drink. So do you want to tell us about the ingredients?
Yeah. So I was reading this really interesting paper about plant polyphenols and their ability to sort of simulate some of those fasting based pathways, like activating AMPK, NRF2, PGC1 alpha, mitochondrial biogenesis, increasing sort of antioxidant stores, all those kind of things that maybe people would have heard of in relation to certain plant compounds or certain supplements. And what came up was, things like curcumin, green tea. People have probably heard a lot about broccoli sprouts or sulforaphane. And if you haven't heard about it, then go and listen and watch Rhonda Patrick talk about it, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, because she's probably now become the world's expert on sulforaphane and broccoli sprouts. And I saw all these things and I thought, actually, you could really easily make a tea out of that and put some really good stuff in there. And so literally that's what I did. So one Saturday afternoon, I took some matcha green tea, and then I threw in some grapeseed extract, some bilberry extract. So this is a dark blueberry, a Nordic blueberry, also a bit of turmeric, and some broccoli seeds, and I ground them up first and threw that all together, and it actually tasted pretty good. And I tried to get the relative levels of things so that you're kind of in the range that these things have been shown to improve health. And like, so it might sound that it might be quite bitter, but actually the bilberry extract, the berry extract sort of mellows out the bitterness quite well, and it just has a kind of a savory green tea kind of flavor, which actually works really well. So I kind of threw that together in the kitchen, and then people said, "Oh, that sounds really interesting. Send me some." So I made a few big batches and went around to various people, particularly the guys at Nourish Balance Thrive. And then from there, we kind of decided we'd try and turn it into something that we could maybe sell because we quite like it. And we've just created the first couple of big batches and put them in little tubs, and they're going to be available really soon.
Awesome. Let's drill down and talk about some of these compounds because I think they're really interesting. Do you want to talk about anthocyanins?
Yeah, so anthocyanins are the things that make berries purple. I absolutely love them because they do so many amazing things, and it's one of the reasons why I think berries are one of the best things that we can include in our diet regularly. And the time that I first really started thinking about berries and anthocyanins was when I was working on the root cause analysis of multiple sclerosis. So this was kind of one of the first things that I did in the sort of functional health space. And I was doing this because my stepbrother was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And because of some of the benefits of these anthocyanins, anybody who's worked with us for multiple sclerosis is essentially prescribed a pound of dark Nordic blueberries, Vaccinium myrtillus, every day. And that sounds like quite a lot, but actually it's pretty easy to eat that many blueberries. And, specifically in multiple sclerosis, they can sort of inhibit some of the enzymes that break down the blood-brain barrier in multiple sclerosis and give the blood and the immune system better access to the brain, which is what we don't want. So they can sort of help heal the blood-brain barrier. So that's why we use them there. But, at the same time, if you look at giving either blueberry extracts or just frozen or large amounts of fresh blueberries, up to about a pound again. You know, you see improvements in disease score in ulcerative colitis and reduced inflammatory markers in the stool like calprotectin. It can reduce DNA oxidative damage, improves vascular function, in, particularly in people who have some kind of cardiovascular disease. You know, they've even shown that it improves gait, speed, and agility if you give these berries to the elderly. And one other study that we really like is that if you give berries and you add them to a carbohydrate-based meal, they seem to reduce the insulin and glucose responses to the carbohydrates.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights, which I read out at the beginning of the podcast one time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because the anthocyanins can inhibit glucosidase enzymes, so they reduce or slow the digestion of carbohydrates. So even though you're adding carbs to a meal, by adding berries, it will actually reduce both the insulin and glucose responses. So I thought that was pretty cool. So, you know, anthocyanins and dark berries are really one of my favorite things. Uh-huh. And that's why they make up about 30 to 40% of the Hormee tea alongside matcha, which is in a sort of a similar level.
Right, right, right. It looks so beautiful, the powder. My wife made some up just the other day, and the powders themselves are really, really beautiful. Is there a way for you to direct people at the farmer's market to get hold of these compounds in berries? Because those are just coming into season where we are.
Yeah, so basically, I think the way that we sort of determine some of the healthful side effects of plants are sort of those really bright colors, and that's the polyphenols that we've managed to sort of extract for Hormee tea, and you know, they're available in various guises. But basically, dark berries that are dark all the way through, you know, if you think about the traditional American blueberry, it's kind of green and insipid looking in the middle.
Yeah.
That doesn't have very many anthocyanins. So those aren't the ones you want. You want the ones that grow in the wild. You know, they're here in the Pacific Northwest, they grow in the wild. In the Nordic countries, they grow in the wild. You know, in various places, people will know them sort of bushes close to the ground, and they're dark purple all the way through. So you can either buy those in the store, you can buy them online, they can arrive frozen. You can go and pick them yourself. And those are the really good ones. Those are the ones that you want. The more purple, the better.
Okay. Yeah. And I've seen them online in a couple of different places. You can get them frozen. And I'll link to that in the show notes. Okay. So let's talk about matcha then. That's something that's kind of been my, you know, I used to be on coffee and then I got off that because it was affecting my sleep. And then you get to start on the green tea, and then the green tea became matcha green tea. And you wonder whether you should just maybe just forget it and drink coffee again, because that's what you're doing really. But there may be some other interesting benefits for matcha. So talk about matcha green tea.
Yeah. So matcha is a type of green tea. It tends to come as a powder rather than as a leaf, which you then dissolve in water. And it has sort of a ceremonial history, and you can get ceremonial grade matcha, and it involves a certain bamboo stirring implement, and you have to measure out with a bamboo spoon and heat it at a certain temperature. It's about 80 to 85 degrees Celsius, so below boiling. And the reason why I chose matcha is because it has a higher concentration of the catechins compared to normal green tea. And these are sort of, again, the phenolic compounds in green tea that have some of those benefits that we ascribe to green tea, like improved insulin sensitivity. There's some data on green tea extract improving fat mass and fat burning, but that probably only really works in people who aren't habitually drinking a lot of caffeine, because there's a synergistic effect with caffeine there. So maybe people who have a real caffeine habit won't get that benefit. But there's some interesting data that might help with the browning of fat, which we know is usually associated with good metabolic or better metabolic health. Some studies on these catechins have shown they improve cognitive function in those with cognitive decline. And again, they might reduce carbohydrate absorption like the anthocyanins. So, you know, if you're going to have a carbohydrate-based meal, but you want to reduce some of the metabolic effects of it, then I think something like these can be really nice to include and sort of dampen down some of that effect. Because we definitely, in certain scenarios, want people eating carbohydrates, but maybe they want to minimize, you know, some of the insulin release or exposure to that, which may have the detrimental effects in the longer term.
Okay. And what about grapeseed extract? I was kind of wondering whether that might have an effect on the gut microbiome, because we see grapeseed extract in many of the antimicrobial supplements that we use in our clinic for maybe treating bacterial or yeast overgrowth. What do you think?
In most places where you're using something as like an antimicrobial, it tends to also be grapefruit seed extract, and the two are kind of sometimes mixed up.
I think so. I might have just done that. Yeah.
So we tend to use grapefruit seed extract as an antimicrobial, but this is grape seed extract from grapes. And it's sort of in that same area, sort of resveratrol, if you're thinking about another grape extract that supposedly has some health benefits. And people have used grapeseed extract, again, in clinical trials. It seems to improve blood pressure and glycemic control in people with insulin resistance, might reduce oxidized LDL. So it does seem to have some benefits in people with, particularly with metabolic disease. And that's where, you know, most of these studies are being done, because they're being used as some kind of nutraceutical to improve a disease state. But the reason why I include them is because they're sort of in this sort of spectrum of colorful polyphenols that potentially have health benefits. So if you think about all the ones that we've talked about, you have the anthocyanins that are purple, the grapeseed extract is a nice red color, matches green, turmeric's a nice yellow. So you kind of have the whole spectrum, and that's why I tried to include it.
It's kind of sad. And then the turmeric that we'll get onto next is another really beautiful color. And so you've got all these individual ingredients that look absolutely incredible on their own. And then you mix it all together and what happens?
It just goes kind of a greeny brown color.
Sorry about that. I'll post a picture of what they look like individually in the show notes, so you can have a look at that. But talk about turmeric.
Yeah, it's, I mean, people have heard a huge amount about turmeric, and curcumin is increasingly being used as an anti-inflammatory for various conditions. And, you know, if you look at the real sort of hardcore randomized controlled trials, there isn't a huge amount of evidence to really support that, you know, curcumin is kind of the be all and end all, as some people say it is. But I think, you know, certain small studies show that it definitely improves levels of inflammation and joint pain and things like arthritis. And we've definitely used it to quite some benefit in people who have some kind of inflammatory process going on, particularly in the gut. One of the issues is with turmeric itself, so sort of the base root, is that, well, first of all, it's only about 1-5% curcumin, and then that curcumin isn't very bioavailable. So you can increase the bioavailability by using black pepper, and black pepper inhibits some of the metabolism in the liver. Actually, if you want some kind of systemic anti-inflammatory effect from turmeric, you're probably going to need to take curcumin, and you'll probably need to take it in some kind of altered format like BCM95 or Mareva, or you can get various type of liposomal formulations which improve their bioavailability. But when you're looking at sort of turmeric itself, a lot of it will stay in the gut. And actually, I think that's kind of where potentially that's where a lot of this benefit is going to be. It can sort of improve intestinal permeability, at least in some animal models. And if you give large doses of turmeric, so maybe if you had 2 or 3 cups of 4-MeT a day, you're sort of in that range. And then you're, you know, you've seen things like improved or lower CRP levels in people with, particularly in people with metabolic syndrome. So it's kind of, it's unlikely that the amount of turmeric in HORMET is going to give you a huge systemic amount of curcumin. But I think particularly within the gut, there'll be some benefit. And it's sort of, again, it's part of that. If we're trying to increase our intake of this sort of wide spectrum of polyphenols that I'm fairly sure are going to have quite a lot of benefits, that's why I think it's still going to be beneficial, even though it's not giving us those sort of huge systemic doses of curcumin.
Right, right, right. And then broccoli seeds. I just got into, I guess this was Rhonda Patrick that, actually that's not true, because Jamie Kendallweed that I started the business with, I know she's been talking about broccoli seeds for a long, long time. Broccoli sprouts, I should say. And I only started growing them once Rhonda started talking about them. And the first time I grew them, they came out great. And then every time after that, because I wasn't paying quite so much attention, they went moldy, and it's super annoying. Do you know when you put in a ton of effort into something and then you get home one day and it's just all really, really moldy? And I wish there was an easier way. And it seems like there now is an easier way, and I'm not going to lose any of the benefit. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. And that's because the broccoli seeds, so broccoli sprouts have a much greater, higher concentration of sulforaphane, or at least the precursor of sulforaphane, glucoraphanin, compared to, say, broccoli. And then actually higher than broccoli sprouts is broccoli seeds. But a lot of people sort of originally avoided them because they have a slightly strange flavor. But if you grind up the seeds and then you activate them with heat, which is obviously what you're going to do when you pour hot water on your tea, then you'll get quite a significant production of sulforaphane, which then has all those benefits. So I think as part of a greater whole, you can get those seeds in a nice way, and then you don't have to go through all the effort of sprouting all that stuff, which I did too, and I do still do occasionally, and I put them in my morning smoothie. But if you can do it with the dry seeds and get the same effect, then I think that's definitely going to speed up the process for many people.
Mm-hmm. Talk about NRF2 and explain it like I was 5. That's my new thing at the moment. Explain it like I was 5. So NRF2 explained like I was 5.
So NRF2 is basically, so the pathway is one of the main ways in which we detect stress, any kind of stress, and that can be, heat stress, so being exposed to heat. It could be oxidative stress, so oxygen, free radicals, reactive oxygen species. I'm going to pretend you're a very up-to-date five-year-old. So any of those kind of cellular stresses kind of activate the NRF2 pathway and then upregulate some of the enzymes involved in antioxidant defense, so involved in generating and recycling glutathione, but also can involve things like ferritin and activation of mitochondrial biogenesis. So anything that will sort of buffer your ability or increase your ability to handle stress and buffer stress, those seem to be upregulated by the NRF2 pathway. So that's why people have become really excited about sulforaphane. And I think that's kind of, it's received a lot of attention, understandably, but I think it's equally important to remember that there are all these other great compounds that we can get in various foods. They're also going to have this great benefit. So I think we could sort of really focus on sulforaphane. A lot of people have done that, but equally, I think we don't want to forget about all the other great stuff that we could also be eating.
Okay, so this is where the name, the play on hormesis comes from, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a little workout, an intracellular workout. But what happens if I'm already in an unstable state? Let's say I'm already overstressed. Would this make me worse? Like, what happens when you give this to someone who's metabolically deranged, say with type 2 diabetes?
That's a really good question. And that's sort of the importance of hormesis versus total allostatic load. And I think particularly the ways that these compounds tend to act, they've been looked at both individually and in certain combinations. And the combinations, they definitely have a synergistic effect. So some of the catechins in green tea can inhibit the enzymes that break down, say, quercetin in berries. So they can kind of increase the benefit of each other. So, and when they're used in people with some kind of metabolic derangement, there generally tends to be an improvement. So like I said, most of the studies that I'm citing in terms of these compounds improving health are in people who are already metabolically deranged. So you could definitely argue that adding more stress on top of a stress system can have a negative effect, but at least for these compounds, that doesn't seem to be the case. They do seem to have a beneficial effect.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we could design an experiment that would show that the tea is working? So you've listed some markers here, improves 8-hydroxy-2-deoxyguanosine, GGT, ALT. Those are all things that we test, right? Could we do a study that shows that this is working?
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that we're thinking about how best to arrange. So we can measure 8-hydroxy-2-deoxyguanosine, which is a marker of oxidative DNA damage. We can measure that in the urine. Obviously, some of the other markers we can measure in blood, like the liver function enzymes. We can also measure blood glucose and insulin sensitivity by looking at insulin levels, glucose levels, you know, maybe also looking at things like triglycerides and HDL and all that kind of stuff. So we could definitely do that with basic blood markers. The more people we recruit, it rapidly becomes a multi-$1,000 study just because the testing isn't cheap. But that's definitely something that we're looking to do because absolutely, you know, as with the fat fiber, I don't want to make something and tell people it's going to have health benefits. And then if it doesn't really do anything, then, well, I mean, it tastes nice, right? So
yeah, definitely tastes nice.
Yeah, so I mean, like, worst case scenario is you've just had a nice cup of tea, but it would be great if, you know, if it had the benefits that I think it will.
It's like the grounding. Worst case scenario, you've been for a lovely walk first thing in the morning with no shoes on.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, we're talking, you know, potential benefit and really low risk interventions here, which is absolutely what we want to focus on.
Uh-huh. Talk about the preparation for hormone tea, because that might be important.
Yeah, so generally I have recommended that people have like a two-stage process. So if you look at the studies on activating myrosinase, so the enzyme in broccoli sprouts and broccoli seeds that creates the sulforaphane, you tend to get the best production of sulforaphane and reduced production of like the inactive other product that can be produced, the sulforaphane nitrile. You get best production of sulforaphane if it's heated to around 70 to 80 degrees Celsius, so like 160, 170 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, if you're a matcha green tea person and you're already paying close attention to the temperature of your water, then actually, you know, you could just brew it at the same temperature as you brew your matcha and, you know, you're pretty much in the right spot. But what I do is tend to add hot water, so around 70 degrees Celsius, or boil the kettle and let it sit for a few minutes and sort of make sort of like a slurry in the bottom of my cup. And then 5, 10, 20 minutes later, depending on how patient you can be, then I'll top it up with hot water. And then you've sort of created all your sulforaphane and then you sort of heat it up to a tea temperature and then you can drink it as normal.
Cool. Well, if you would like to get hold of some of this tea, it's available now, but only in a sample form. So there's some special tasks that you need to perform in order to get hold of this elusive elixir, which is you need to go over to iTunes and leave me a 5-star review, and I'll give you the video instructions to do that in the show notes for this episode. And then I want you to email support@nourishbalancethrive.com and give me your US shipping address. So unfortunately, this offer is limited to people in the US because the shipping is quite expensive. And then it's also limited to the first 100 people that do this. So I've got 50 tubs made up, 50 grams each, all ready to go right here. And then Julie can make up some more. It'll take her a while. And we might have to get some more labels printed. But we will make it happen. So the first 100 people that give me a 5-star review on iTunes, we will send you a sample of Hormity. And I think you're really going to like it. And if you do like it, I would love it if you let me know. If you hate it, even more so. I want to know even more, right? So that we stop doing things that people don't like.
But equally, there's a lot of, you know, we can play with the composition, add various things. There are lots of other things I've thought about adding or taking away that could sort of change the profile. So if people do or don't like it or have some other thoughts of things we could include, then all the better. You know, this was just sort of the thing that I threw together and then thought, oh, it's actually pretty good. So, but that doesn't mean that there isn't room for improvement.
You know, it's really funny. When Julie tasted it, she said, I know what I want this to be. And she added it to bone broth and said, that is exactly what I wanted this to be. Taste this. And I think she's got quite a sophisticated palate, you know, background in food science, very much a passionate cook in the kitchen. And it makes this very sort of whole, it tastes like a green pea soup, you know, it's kind of weird. It's very, I can't think what the word is, it's umami, right? It's quite
savory.
It's savory. So that's kind of an interesting thing you can play around with if you're already consuming bone broth. Add some Hormity to your bone broth. Let us know what you think about that. Remember, if you're interested in the Icelandic Health Symposium, link is in the show notes. Fat Fiber is available now, along with the peer-reviewed open access paper. And then Hormity is available. Give me a 5-star review on iTunes. I will send you some Hormity if you're in the US. If you're not in the US, I'm sorry. I'll bring you some to Iceland. How about that? Tommy, you've been doing some organic acids testing on yourself. Can you talk about what you did and maybe more importantly, why you did it?
Yeah. So actually this, I guess it was the end of December, was the first time I'd done an organic acids test. You know, I've looked at plenty and helped people with plenty. You know, we've probably done hundreds of Nourish Balance.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. So for people that don't know, I should explain actually. So it's a urine test. You collect a first morning void. So this is the first time you pee first thing in the morning. And then you freeze the sample. You give FedEx a ring. They come to your house. They pick up the sample. They take it to the lab. And then Bill Shaw, who's been on my podcast, I'm sure he does each and every single one of those tests personally still, right? He runs it through his mass spectrometer, and then he produces this PDF report, and it tells you about all sorts of small molecules that appeared in your urine. And then when you have the vast knowledge of both Bill and then someone like Tommy, who understands biochemistry, they can tell you about what's going on inside of your body. So this is really interesting stuff to biochemists.
Yeah, and in terms of the stuff that you can look at, so we use the Great Plains organic acids, and Geneva has a version too. But we tend to look at a lot of things associated with yeast overgrowth, some bacterial overgrowths. We look at some neurotransmitter turnover, some things associated with mitochondrial function and various micronutrients, vitamins, B vitamins, the need for stuff like methyl groups, methyl folate, and, you know, oxidative stress, glutathione, all that kind of stuff. So you can really have a nice sort of look into somebody's metabolism and have an idea of what's going on and then what you could do to improve their health. So this is the first time I'd had access to one because I was in Norway, and sort of shipping that stuff over from Norway was just a real pain. So I did one at the end of December, and sort of as part of the first one that I did, I wanted to do an experiment and do like a before and after. So what I did a before and after on was Qualia, which people may have heard of. It's become very popular or celebrated nootropic. So it's got lots of various compounds supposed to improve cognitive function. And I thought, you know, I also haven't necessarily played that much with nootropics. And I thought I'll try this because it's had, you know, rave reviews from various people. And I thought, you know, I'll get some, I'll do my organic acids before and after, because they let me look at things like my neurotransmitters, which should be modulated by various nootropics and things that alter cognitive function. And so I'll do a before, take Qualia for a month, as they suggest that you do, and then do an after and look at the difference. So that's what I did.
Did you notice anything just in terms of your symptom or cognitive ability?
Absolutely. I took it at a time when I would have definitely benefited from any beneficial effects on cognitive function, but then also at a time when, you know, there was a fairly high risk of, you know, if it sort of made me worse in any way, you know, it was probably a dicey time to take it, but I thought that'd be the best way to try it. So it was in the month before my PhD defense. So this is a time when I'm basically working pretty much all day, every day, reading the research that I did myself, reading the research around the topic of my PhD, preparing two lectures that I would have to give to an audience of experts in my field, and then spend, you know, it ended up being 3 hours being grilled on all the stuff that I did in my PhD. So it's quite an intense day, but then also the month up to that, you have to work pretty hard just to sort of make sure you're bang up to date in terms of the research knowledge. So I took it during that time, and the guys who make it said that the initial effects are quite different from the long-term effects, and I definitely noticed that. So when I first took it, it is very stimulating, and if I had ever taken MDMA, it feels a little bit like taking a small amount of MDMA or amphetamines, and it sort of gives you this sense of alertness but also kind of well-being, and it was definitely noticeable, like you could feel it come on. But the problem was, this is in the first couple of weeks particularly, I definitely had a come down in the afternoon. So in the afternoons, like, I got a bit of a headache. I felt a bit grouchy. So I'd felt great for a few hours. And then in the afternoons, you know, maybe 6-7 hours after I took it, I definitely felt like that those effects were wearing off. In the longer term, sort of 3 to 4 weeks, I would notice sort of the initial boost less, but then I also would have less of sort of a come down later. And I think things sort of mellow out over time, and I definitely noticed that. But interestingly, particularly in the evenings, I think because you're sort of driving some of the, because so basically the compounds in Qualia upregulate almost all of the neurotransmitter pathways in the brain. So acetylcholine, dopamine, serotonin. So basically all of that is upregulated. And then in the evenings, I would get really sleepy. So I've basically generated all these, you know, byproducts that you get from the brain working hard, if you want to call it that, things like adenosine, which then drive sleep pressure. And I definitely felt sleepier in the evenings because of that. So obviously I was working my brain harder, so then I needed to rest it harder. And I definitely noticed that particularly early on. And again, that's sort of decreased over time. They do actually say that if you're not sleeping properly, then you don't get as many of the benefits. And I can kind of imagine that that's definitely part of it. And towards the end of that month, actually in the run up to my PhD defense, I spent, you know, I had all this time with my like talks and things running through my head. So I actually slept really poorly for the, you know, the last few days. And then I had to fly to Norway and I did my defense with jet lag, not having slept for a few days. And I kept taking it. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised if it helped me do pretty well. So, I mean, my defense went very, very well. And, you know, maybe that gave me some of the buffer that allowed me to do that, considering all the stress and all the stuff around it. Could just be a fabulous placebo effect. But considering the outcome, I'm very happy to take that. I mean, it was definitely a very interesting, experience. Definitely noticed an effect. I think it was really worth doing. And you can kind of see, I'm happy for people to look at my organic acids tests. We can upload them to the website. People can look at them. What I saw, you know, unsurprisingly, was actually all of my neurotransmitters were fairly low. So including things like dopamine and noradrenaline, which is sort of the next step in the pathway from dopamine. Dopamine is converted into noradrenaline. But then equally, some of the serotonin turnover, low serotonin. And I think this is probably because, well, I mean, my theory is that if you look at my genetics, I have all the SNPs that upregulate monoamine oxidase A activity. So I'd probably chew through my dopamine pretty quickly. I probably chew through those neurotransmitters pretty quickly, and then I end up with low overall levels. But obviously, what is your level and works for you is very individual. So I'm not saying, I feel like my brain works pretty well. So
I feel like your brain works pretty well. So I'm wondering if you're going to do a washout period and then another PhD, and then the defense with no qualia. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the only way to do it. But I should have been blinded in the first place.
Yeah.
So sadly, I couldn't do that. So then after a month of taking the qualia, I did notice, or I saw, if you look at my organic acid test, an increase in dopamine levels particularly. But the noradrenaline didn't really shift at all. So then maybe there's something to do with the conversion there, that, possibly. And then also serotonin didn't really shift the needle at all either. Mm-hmm. So So I think there's definitely having an effect there, particularly on the dopaminergic pathways. So yeah, it's interesting to actually, you know, see a quantified effect, you know, that is actually sort of doing something biochemically. And obviously a lot of other stuff happened during that time, you know, in terms of the stress and moving around and all that stuff, doing the defense. So
right.
part of that probably feeds into the change in my results. You know, it's right. definitely not just the qualia. But I did make sure I didn't take any other supplements during that time. I was just doing that. I'd had a washout period initially because I normally take some various vitamins and supplements and things. So I did try and control all those factors, and that was the only thing that I was taking at the time.
Talk about what some of these neurotransmitters do. I know it's probably not possible to discuss them in isolation, but I think we do know a little bit about what each of these things do. So talk about dopamine.
Yeah, so dopamine is really interesting, and I know you'll post this video from Robert Sapolsky.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite bits of one of my favourite lectures by Robert Sapolsky on dopamine.
Yeah, and it's basically dopamine is the neurotransmitter that is associated with the drive to do the work to get a reward. So people used to think that you get an increase in dopamine as a reward for something. So, you know, you get a reward and then that increases dopamine in the brain. But actually what increases dopamine is the thought of a potential reward,
right.
which then drives you to do the work that will get you that reward.
Right, right,
and,
right.
And it's actually, you get even higher dopamine if the reward is uncertain. So the best thing that I can associate it with is betting, right?
Yeah.
Betting on sports, because people are driven particularly to bet on things with long odds. So the chance of winning is fairly low, but the anticipation of potentially winning gives you this huge boost of dopamine. And that's what drives that betting behavior.
Right.
You have to, you know, so you get the increase in dopamine that drives you to put on the bet. And that sort of is that potential for a big payout that gives you that boost in dopamine. So that's kind of, if you're going to get a potential reward, increasing dopamine will then motivate you to do the work to try and get that reward.
Mm. Do you know what it says to me? It explains to me how social media works the way that it does, right? When you look at a platform like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, generally what you find is you scroll through miles and miles and miles of crap, and then you'll see something really cool, right? Like somebody you went to school with just had a baby and they're a super cute baby, maybe. Like, I don't know, each person's gonna be individual in what they find to be pleasurable to see. And then you keep scrolling and you keep scrolling and you keep scrolling. And it's that variable reward. If all they showed you was pictures of the baby, the pictures of the good stuff, then the reward would be, the dopamine would be lower, right? You wouldn't come back. You wouldn't have that same drive to come back to the platform and use it again. And I'm sure they must be taking advantage of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then talk about noradrenaline.
Yeah, so noradrenaline, if you look at the test results, they'll call it norepinephrine, which is just the American word for noradrenaline. And in case you're interested, it depends on whether you decide that Greek or Latin is your base language, whether you use norepinephrine or noradrenaline. So that's basically part of the what we consider the sympathetic nervous system. So obviously, you know, that fight or flight, particularly if we're looking at it in the brain, associated with things like increased alertness, but noradrenaline released in the periphery is also, you know, increases how hard the heart beats, causes vasoconstriction, sort of gives you that, gets you ready to do exactly that fight or flight. So it's part of that sort of alerting side of the autonomic nervous system.
Right, right, right. So the start of a exercise, or maybe the start of a race, or maybe even something more mellow than that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. And then talk about serotonin.
Yeah, so serotonin, people will probably know of as part of like depression and mood disorders, because a lot of the drugs that people take for that, serotonin, either agonists or they prevent the reuptake of serotonin into nerve cells. So you end up having more serotonin hanging around stimulating things. And, you know, actually most of the serotonin that we have is based in the gut. So I think it's interesting to think about the fact that when we're looking at serotonin on these urine tests, maybe we're looking more at serotonin in the gut than we're looking at serotonin in the brain, just because of the difference in terms of the volume that's produced and where it's produced. But involved with a number of things, including memory, learning, anxiety particularly, and also, you know, certain serotonin receptors are, you know, used in terms of cognition and things like that. So has like kind of wide ranging effects, but we tend to think that if you're channeling it's created from the amino acid tryptophan. So tryptophan converts into serotonin. Serotonin then goes on to be converted to melatonin. So if you're not making very much serotonin, you might not be producing much melatonin. That's kind of, again, stimulated by light cycles and circadian rhythm and all that kind of stuff. So if you're using your tryptophan to produce more serotonin rather than some of the, you know, there's another side of that pathway. This is the kynurenin pathway. And there are some other, you know, parts of that pathway that can be neurotoxic, particularly increased in inflammatory scenarios, quinolinic acids particularly. And then if you're making more serotonin than quinolinic acid, you're probably in better shape. But if you're making more quinolinic acid, that maybe suggests there's some kind of inflammatory process going on. So that kind of the balance of those systems gives us an idea of certain things, which is sort of like a nice picture into what's going on.
I still find that taking 5-HTP works really well for me for sleep. And I can be quite specific now about what it does to my sleep. So do you know when you put your head on the pillow and what you really want to happen at that time is to let go of the dead man's handle, right? You want the train to come to a stop and you just want to stop thinking about everything and then go to sleep. And sometimes, especially when you're really excited about your work or something else, then it's quite difficult to shut your brain off. And I find that the 5-HTP does a really good job of that. It helps me to shut down my brain and go to sleep. But I find if I keep using it, it stops working after a while. Like I don't get the same effect if I use it over and over and over again. And now I save it for special occasions, you know, like after a bike race or something like that. Or maybe if I'm away traveling or something and I know my sleep environment's going to be compromised a little bit, it's really good for that.
So, I've actually, because of the results of my organic acids test, I've been using 5-HTP for sleep too, and I find exactly the same thing. So 5-HTP goes directly to serotonin rather than going down some of the other parts of the pathway. So you can kind of, you know, rather than putting in tryptophan as, you know, the starting molecules, if you start with 5-HTP, you're more likely to make more serotonin rather than some of the other potential molecules that can be made from tryptophan. So I definitely, because sort of my serotonin levels are at the low end of the normal range, I sort of felt that there was definitely some capacity to boost that part of the pathway, and a 5-HTP definitely works for me in the same way.
Yeah, I should say as well that there are lots of things that the organic acids test reveals that are like this, right? So there's lots of supplements that you could take. The question is, which are the ones that are likely to benefit you the most? And the organic acids test does a really good job of narrowing that down. Not just like throwing supplements at the problem. And the other thing I should say is that the organic acids test is just one tool that we use in our box. So quite often people will hear me talk about organic acids testing on the podcast and say, oh, I really want to do this test. And the truth is that it is just one test, and we normally combine it with many other tests. So we look at urinary hormones, we look at blood chemistry, we do stool testing, and we combine all of this data to form the overall picture. And so sometimes you'll see something odd on the organic acids test, and then I'll need to look at the blood chemistry in order to confirm what I think I'm seeing. So on its own, the test isn't terribly useful. I don't know, maybe that's going too far to say it's not terribly useful, but it's not as useful as it can be when combined with blood chemistry, for example. So if you want to know more about how we use the organic acids testing, I would recommend that you head over to the link in the show notes and you can book a free consultation, and we'll talk about our complete program. And we do actually have some capacity at the moment. So the medical doctor that I started the business with, Jamie, recently had a baby about 6 months ago, and she's almost done with her maternity leave and she's ready to start taking on some additional hours. And so we have some additional capacity in our clinic. And then almost by coincidence at the same time, Tommy, how are you getting on with the ferrets? Tell us about the ferrets.
So I'm currently working, like the day job is working as a postdoc at the University of Washington and trying to develop a model of encephalopathy of prematurity, we call it. It's basically babies who are born prematurely are at a high risk of brain injury, which can result in things like cerebral palsy, autism, you know, sort of anything on that kind of spectrum due to various things like infections or periods of hypoxia or something like that. And, you know, we don't really have great models of that in animals. And obviously my PhD was based in an animal model of a similar disease, but in term-born babies. So I'm trying to develop a model of this disease in ferrets. And actually, it's been a bit touch and go, and they've been trying to do this for a few years. But I think we're getting pretty close, actually. So that's potentially really exciting, because it's a model that's dearly needed to try and test treatments for these babies who don't really have any sort of robust therapy that we know will protect their brains. And particularly in the Western world, babies born prematurely, they can be born earlier and still survive, but then at least 50% of those will end up with some kind of brain injury. So then they're surviving with some kind of disability. And obviously we want to try and minimize that. So I think it's going pretty well. I think 6 months and that will all be, you know, wrapped up and ready to go. And then I can move on to bigger and better things, or different things at least.
And different things. Yeah. You're not just I should make that clear, actually, that you're not just a ferret doctor that you have been working with. So that's the other thing that I awkwardly need to talk about, is the cost of the Elite Performance Program is $8,500 in year one at the moment. And you don't pay it all at once. There's a front loaded payment, and then it's monthly payments after that. And I've been sitting down with some business consultants, and they've really made me see in the light. Like, you've got two doctors that have poured hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of sweat equity into this program that you're running. Are you really charging what it costs? And the answer is no. So it's likely that the cost of the program will go up by several thousand dollars in the very near future. So if you have been on the fence, kind of umming and ahhing, is this something I really want to do? I would encourage you to come forward and at least talk to either Julia or Amelia about what the program has to offer for you. And I think I should say something about what it does have to offer. We talk a lot about the testing. You know, what tests does this include? What supplements does this include? What coaching does this include? And those details, they may be important, but the real thing that the program offers is transformation. So we don't really care whether your goal is to qualify for the Boston Marathon, whether it's to get an erection, whether it's to think more clearly and get past an exam, whether it's to become a professional tennis player, or whether it's to do better in your next cyclocross race. We really don't care what standard of athlete or what your goal is. As long as you have a goal and you're competitive and you're motivated to achieve that goal, then we would really like to talk to you. And it seems kind of strange to me that I've spent years and years and years trying to find doctors that would behave like engineers and really try to debug a problem and look inside of your body. And I've known, even before my health really crashed, I knew that doctors had the ability to look inside of a person and see the complex workings and maybe improve on what was there. And that was likely to have a much greater benefit to my exercise performance than any type of equipment improvement, right? So cyclists in particular, they love to masturbate over the equipment, the derailleurs and the carbon fiber wheels. And, you know, I love all that stuff too, but I know now that the very best people, that, you know, you can give them any type of equipment and they're still going to get the same fantastic results regardless. And really what matters is looking inside the person. And unfortunately, I feel like doctors, they're trapped inside of a system that doesn't work. And so what I was looking for was a doctor in the wild. You know, I'd kind of think about this zoo analogy. So doctors at the moment, they're kind of like zoo animals trapped inside of cages. And maybe what we've created at Nourish Balance Thrive is more of a doctor safari park, right? Like this is what doctors would do if they were in the wild, right? If they had an unlimited budget and an unlimited amount of time to investigate your personal situation. So, you know, people say, oh, is this covered by insurance? No, it's not covered by insurance, because the insurance companies are not at all interested in your performance. You're asking them to ask me to take insurance would be like asking me to put my doctors back into that zoo cage, and that was the very thing that made them work better in the first place. So yeah, it's amazing that, you know, I spent all this time looking for these doctors and now I've got two of them at once. They're like buses, I swear, it's crazy. So yeah, look for the link in the show notes. It's the Elite Performance Program, and you can book a free consultation and talk to somebody in real life, because I realize that nobody's going to pull the trigger on this thing without talking to someone first. So I'd recommend that you do that. Cool. I think feel like this is a nice place to wrap up, Tommy. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, I don't think so. I think that kind of, you know, gives a flavor of what we've been doing. You know, I think it's important to highlight that we spend a lot of time investigating various things so that we can do our jobs better, right? You know, I don't like recommending things to people without sort of knowing what it would do to me or what it does in general, whether there's any science behind it. So if we can't find any science behind it, we'll try it out ourselves. And, you know, it's sort of like an ongoing process that's completely open. And that's why we're putting this research out there. That's why we have our highlights email, which we haven't mentioned yet. So this is something that people can sign up for. If you go to nourishbalancethrive.com/highlights, it's basically an email that I write every week. And when you sign up, you'll start from the beginning, so you won't miss any. And it's basically one thing that you can do to add to your routine, daily routine that week to improve your health. And there will always be at least one, if not many, studies which show why that's the case. But it's usually something very simple you can integrate without too much hassle. Then there'll be something that we'd like to give a different opinion on, you know, maybe something we've heard out in the health sphere or the health news or something that we'd like to maybe clarify, you know, based on some of the underlying biochemistry or physiology. And then just like one thing that we think is really awesome. And it's usually, you know, somebody else has written an awesome book or given an awesome talk or is doing some awesome work that we'd like people to know about. And, you know, there's a huge number of people out there doing, you know, putting all this brilliant content out on the internet. So we want to try and share that too. You know, we definitely don't think we're the only people doing good work. So we want to try and give more people access to that stuff. So, you know, sign up for that email. It all come in one email. You don't need to sort of click on anything else or, you know, do anything else unless you want to read more into the references. So it's all just, you know, everybody's trying to send you an email every day, but I think this is a pretty good one. We've had some really good responses from it. So I think it's sort of excited to keep doing that.
Yeah. The problem is not too much email. The problem is too much email with no value. Right. Yeah. And you are doing something amazing here, which is delivering incredible value in that email. I really, really look forward to that as someone that just has made health a hobby. Right. Like, it's really fun, especially the different perspectives section for me is really, really fun. And I should express some gratitude to all the people that have already signed up, because I did this kind of sad, oh, only 200 people have signed up for Tommy's highlights email. And I checked not long before recording this interview and it was well over 1,000 now. So thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And you don't need to worry about, you've not missed anything. So if you're listening to this thinking, oh crap, I'm missing out here. No, you're not going to miss anything. So when you sign up, I've set up the mailing system so that it emails you the first highlights email first. And the reason I did it that way is because you're going to get something in that email that you might want to consider adding to your routine, right? So you get the first thing, you make the first change, a week later, you get the next email. Oh, that's interesting. I could add that in. Well, the thing that I started doing last week, that's kind of a habit now, right? I now get up and I walk around outside without shoes on, say, as an intervention. And then the next week, the next thing comes along. So the idea is you drip these things in gradually, and then that stops it from being too overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, there will be some things, you know, because we try and stay up to date on stuff. So there will be some things that maybe have a little bit of a shelf life. And we'll definitely, as that stuff potentially happens, you know, we'll always update. So, you know, No matter when you start, you know, you will always be as up to date as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually, we're giving away part of what the business consultants are persuading me is what's making this program so expensive, right? So we spend a considerable amount of time on a really nice internet chat program called Slack that we've grown very fond of. And we've got some really cool people in there, not just the people here on the podcast, but some other people who remain behind the scenes, some of whom are researchers themselves, and just all kinds of cool stuff goes on all day. And then we pick out the coolest of the cool and we put that into our highlights channel, and that eventually ends up in the email. And so this is the inner workings of Nourish, Balance, Thrive, right? I charge people for the amount of time that I spend on the phone or Zoom with them. But what I'm not charging for is all this stuff that goes on the back end. And that's really what makes the program so expensive. So it's kind of cool that you can sign up and get the very best of that absolutely for nothing. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time, Tommy. This has been great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.